Welcome back to the program. So it's bad in cities like Madison or Milwaukee when you're talking about the dug-in teachers union. It's bad here. But you want to know where logic, common sense, insanity go to die? California. Yeah. It's worse there. And I know that might be hard to believe because it's not fun to say, you know, well, maybe other people got it worse. But we're going to talk about how bad it is here and how bad it is everywhere when it comes to the politics of virtual education. Lance Azumi, who is on the phone with me, Pacific Research Institute. He is the senior director of the Center for Education, based out of California, right, Lance?
That's right, Vicki. Wow. Yeah, alas, I have to admit that.
Well, I know. So, you know, bless your heart for sticking it out in California. So it is worse there where you've got the teachers unions flat out saying it's racist to go back to school. There's a patina of that here, but it's not as nearly as overt as it is either in Chicago or in Los Angeles or San Francisco where the teachers unions call the shot. So that is not true, that it is not true that only white parents want their kids back in school. This is pretty much universal at this point that everybody wants their kids back in school.
That's absolutely right, Vicki. I mean, for the teachers union, for example, the head of the United Teachers of Los Angeles, the most powerful local union here in California, you know, came out and basically said that, you know, parents who want to push their kids back into school are, you know, supporting systemic racism, and basically that only wealthy white parents want their kids back in school, which is just absolutely astounding that someone could say that when the kids who are actually suffering the most from this distance learning that they're having to do right now are minority kids, low-income kids, black and brown kids, and, you know, you've seen a lot of reaction from parents in African-American communities and Hispanic communities against the remarks of the teachers' unions and the positions of the teachers' unions, because their kids are the ones who are not only suffering academically, but they're the ones who are suffering when it comes to social and emotional and mental issues as well.
So we had a study out, was about 2 weeks now, that looked at insurance claims. And you had, depending on what the mental health issue was, it was anywhere from, 81% to well over 100% increase in insurance claims for various types of mental distress for children, I believe, between the ages of 13 and 18. And so that we know that we actually have measurable data on that. Do we have data on the decline in learning? Because it seems to me that now's the time to see whether we can measure just how bad kids are doing. And if you look at Madison schools, Lance, black children, Hispanic children in the Madison schools are at 9% proficiency in English language arts, 9.8% proficiency in mathematics. That's the proficiency level. So over 90% failure and many, many below basic, basically illiterate in the schools. So do we know whether or not that 9% is going to fall to 5% because of what's been going on?
Oh, I think it's, that unfortunately that downward trajectory is going to continue to keep on going, probably, you know, at even a steeper angle because, kids have lost so much, and going forward, they have no foundation on which to build. I mean, and we are seeing research that has been issued recently on the decline in achievement and in learning of kids. Stanford University, for example, just put out a study that looked at 19 different states and found that in reading and mathematics, the kids were losing anywhere from 100 to 200 days of learning in the basic subjects. So you have studies in different states, like in Ohio, a recent study came out that showed that, I believe, African-American students had lost a half a year's worth of learning. Here in my own home state of California, you see, like in a district like the Los Angeles School District, you find that African Americans and Latino students are now about 25% of them are getting failing grades in at least one subject, and which is a lot more than you see, a year ago. And I think that parents and students are reacting to this. You know, unfortunately, what's happening is that you're seeing a lot of kids just drop away from the system. I mean, here in California, you have 155,000 students who have not shown up for the fall school year.
Wow.
And so, yeah, I mean, and that's five times more than would have been seen in a normal school year. So, you know, over 150,000 kids just kind of disappeared.
It was a lost generation.
We don't know.
We're losing this generation. They you know, to catch up, you know, from 100 to 200 days, that requires intensive intervention. If you've lost 100 to 200 days in reading, if you're a half a year behind, that requires special attention, almost special education. We had a couple of data points here in Wisconsin and Oshkosh. 28% of kids had one failing grade or more. In Waukesha schools, 30% of kids had one failing grade or more. So we are seeing it. We don't get comprehensive data in the state of Wisconsin. So what can parents do? You got the teachers unions dug in. Here in Madison, it's give us more, you know, give us a bigger wad of money. Same thing's true everywhere else. Give us more money. We want more money. And, you know, there's a lot of money out there, but it's not like we've got a bottomless pit, especially since you've declined in, you know, economic output. So what can parents do if they're at their wit's end?
Well, I think there's like several things that parents can do. I mean, first of all, parents now, because they're so fed up because of the school lockdowns and the failure of all the various interest groups within the public school system to agree on opening the schools immediately for their kids, I think you're seeing such disillusionment from parents that you look at polling data that you have large numbers, large percentages of parents now who are going to consider homeschooling even after the pandemic is over, because they don't want to send their kids back to school. And you mentioned the whole remediation of these kids who have lost all this learning. You know, why would we want to rely on the same system that was not very good before COVID to now depend on them to remediate your kid because they've lost a year's worth of learning? And that doesn't make much sense, because good luck with that. So I think you're going to see more parents who consider homeschooling. I think that there's some interesting legislation going on in Washington. For example, Senator Marco Rubio has a bill with a number of different co-sponsors that basically would say that, hey, this federal money that's going to be going to the schools, if the schools don't reopen, then that money should then be given to parents to be able to backpack their kid to go to their school of the choice. And we've seen in the private sector, a lot of schools have remained open, whereas most of the public schools have remained closed. In San Francisco, for example, most of the private schools have stayed open while the public schools have been closed. So 15,000 private school kids have, you know, continued to be educated, while unfortunately their public school peers have suffered at home.
We have that here as well. Yeah, that same thing's happening here. The private school kids, the Christian school kids, Catholic school kids, they're going back to school. You mentioned something when we were talking briefly before we got on the air, and that was about charter schools partnering with parents to sort of help them homeschool. So how does that work, and how might a parent go about approaching a charter school with a potential request like that?
Well, you know, around the country, but certainly here where I'm at in California, there are charter schools that actually specialize in addressing or servicing the needs of homeschoolers. So, for example, there are a couple of schools in the Sacramento area where I live in Sacramento, which their main audience, their main group of students are homeschoolers, and what they do is they provide homeschoolers with the curriculum and other needs, but they learn at home, but they can come into the charter school, the brick and mortar charter school, to do workshops, to do enrichment classes. So they might be on a brick and mortar campus maybe 1 or 2 days a week if they so choose. You know, the rest of the time they're doing their studies at home. And so it's a great partnership, because the parents have the ability to have an institution that provides them with various resources that may be a little difficult for them if they were just homeschooling on their own. There's also the natural social interaction that the kids will get through the charter school. So it's a great win-win for parents who want to homeschool. And I would suggest that the parents who may not have that available in Wisconsin, for example, should look at some of these examples. I have several examples of that in a recent book I wrote called Choosing Diversity, which I wrote a year or so ago, and it's on the different models of charter schools. And I profile several of these schools that have this homeschooling component. And if people look at that in your audience, they'll see that charter schools offer a lot of different varieties that are especially important during this COVID lockdown time.
Yeah, and that also, it allows the charter school more flexibility to take more students in a different type of approach to education, because your kids, whatever, one-on-one individual, attenuated education is going to be easier because you've got a parent that's going to be taking on the lion's share of responsibility. If you're a homeschool parent, the charter school, you know, potentially can help a lot more. I don't know if that exists as a model in Wisconsin. If it doesn't, it should be empowered. If it doesn't need to be empowered, then charter schools should start looking at that right now. Every parent out there that has been stuck with your kid at home in a virtual school environment, there are better virtual schools, right? I have a friend who runs an online academy that's fantastic. There are better ways to get your kids educated. And in terms of catching up now, that's all going to be on the parents, because the schools don't have the personnel, they don't have the talent, and they don't have the resources to do it. So when you're talking about those numbers you mentioned, Lance, 100 to 200 days behind in reading or math, half a year behind, a quarter of the kids are dropping out or flunking. You're relying on the public schools to fix the problem they created is probably a fool's errand, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I would absolutely say so. I mean, you just have to look, at, pre-COVID, let's say, test scores. I mean, here in California, for example, before COVID, only about a third of the kids here in the regular public schools were proficient in mathematics or reading here. And so why would you expect a system that couldn't get, a whole lot more kids up to the proficient level in the basic subjects to be able to remediate those kids in those same subjects? And it doesn't really make any sense.
No, it doesn't.
And so, therefore, I think it's really going to be up to parents. And I think that what you're going to see is a greater push by parents. They're not just going to stop at wanting to have the schools reopen. I think that what they're going to do is they're going to push policymakers to give them more choices in their education options, because they've found out that basically the public school system, the emperor has no clothes.
Yeah, and so this suggests that this is a strong argument for expanding the school voucher program here in our state, and looking seriously and aggressively at an education savings account legislation. I know we've got Tony Evers, and he would never agree to it because he's anti-charter school, he's anti-school choice, he's anti-ESA. Apparently, he's pro-failure. He was comfortable as superintendent of public instruction at 36%. That's our proficiency, according to the national assessments, around 36 to 39% proficiency. So, at what point, I don't know, but some lawmaker needs to start getting, priming the pump for a discussion in our state about these kinds of things, because I think a lot of parents would have a lot of good ideas, too, on how to make the legislation better. Where can people learn more, though? Some of these models and ideas and innovations that some folks that you know of in California have engaged, where maybe they could do a little research on their own and help themselves.
Well, I think that, as I mentioned, I think that one of the resources from our institute, the Pacific Research Institute, that people can access would be to look at our book, the book I wrote called Choosing Diversity on Charter Schools. I've got a new study that is coming out on the whole issue of school reopenings. All of the, facts and figures that you and I have been mentioning in this discussion, are going to be in this report that should be issued this week by PRI on the school reopening issue. And I think that that's going to be very helpful for parents, especially when they want to, ask their representatives to, help them, have more options in order to deal with the crisis that they as individuals are facing.
PacificResearch.org, right? That's where you can find PRI, PacificResearch.org. And I think your book is actually pretty accessible from the homepage here as well. Thank you, Lance, for being on the program today.
Thank you so much, Vicki. It's great to always be on your show.
All right. Lance Azumi from Pacific Research Institute, Choosing Diversity on Charter Schools is the name of Lance's book. You can go to PacificResearch.org for all kinds of things, from everything from research, data. If you're somebody who likes to quote chapter and verse on data, great resource on that. Great resource on educational choice. lots of innovative ideas out there because of parents' frustrations with the government refusing to allow their children to thrive. So make sure you empower yourself a little bit, because Madison's not going to get out of your way for you. You're going to have to shove them out of your way on behalf of your kids. I'm going to take a quick break. This is the Vicki McKenna Show. We'll be right back.